All right, go ahead, talk. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. Welcome to the Word Bros Podcast. We're now on Twitter. Well, we're now back on Twitter at Word Bros Podcast because I forgot the login to the original one and I couldn't access the email because I forgot the original one. So we are now Word Bros Podcast. That's our Twitter handle. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, Word Bro Podcast. One word, Word Bro Podcast. That is us.
That's us.
Yes, Word Bro Pod.
And if you don't know, I'm Kevin and yes, he's Bob.
My name is Bob and we indeed are the Word Bros. And we do make comics and we talk to people who make comics and we enjoy comics. Today is a big day for the Word Bros. Metal Shark Bro Volume 1 hits comic shops today. The binge line is pretty neat. I don't think a lot of people really understand how it worked. If you picked up issue one, there's not going to be an issue two, three, and four. It's issue one and then trade paperback.
Yes. So if you're a collector guy and you want to get the whole thing in issues, that can't happen for you. But you can get an issue one and collect that. And then you can go buy the rest of the story in the trade paperback. So the idea is behind the binge line is that it satisfies the collector market and the collectability of an issue one, and it satisfies the trade paperback market that it seems to be growing more in comics than individual issues and collecting the rest of the story in a trade format.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So that's the idea. So hopefully, like, we can make that work for Scout and for us because we want that to happen. We want that to work.
And it's a pretty cool idea.
Oh, yeah. I think it's a great idea. I mean, me personally, I think it's a great idea because you're hitting the two most important markets in comics. People bitch a lot about the speculator market and they bitch a lot about comic collectors driving up prices and this and that. But without those guys buying comics and speculating on them, like, I would say your LCS may not do as much business or may not do as well in their business because of or their business model, depending on if your LCS sells trades or not. And most LCSs have picked up and gone to the format of selling trades, but some don't. So it just depends, you know. Like, unfortunately for Metal Shark Bro, that means that you only have an issue one. But for other books, it's a good thing.
Yeah, you don't have to wait for the trade. It's all there in one fell swoop, and it's a really low price. It's $12.
It's super cheap, so you can go out and grab it. You can go to Barnes & Noble because it's got an ISBN number.
I don't know if it's at Barnes & Noble yet. No. I'm not sure. We got to get that information because I think Scout just signed some stuff with book distributors. So I think that may be happening later. But as for right now, you can just go to your local comic shop and order it, and it'll be there. You'll get it. So, yeah, man. So Metal Shark Bro Volume 1 is in stores today, because today is what, the 26th of July of June, coming the 16th of July is Metal Shark Bro Volume 2 Kickstarter. The boys are back in town. We're getting back together on this thing. Walter, myself, Big Kev, my main man Chaz Pengburn, we're getting the boys together and we're doing the second volume. So keep your eyes open for that. That'll be really fun. So
get the band back together for volume 2.
Yeah, buddy. And today we've got a very exciting guest who's also running a Kickstarter right now. He's doing a book with our main man Shane Berryhill, who's a great writer and friend out of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Today we're talking to Alex Ogle, who is doing a book called Jason and the Argonauts. So we're going to talk to him, and he's going to tell us all about his Kickstarter and all kinds of wonderful stuff. So let's listen to that.
I think you just wanted to say Chattanooga, Tennessee.
I love that word, Chattanooga.
It just sounds very pro wrestling.
It does. Chattanooga Civic Center. We're going to tear it down, baby.
We're here with Alex Ogle, who is promoting his Kickstarter with Shane Berryhill. That is Jason and the Argonauts. It's live on Kickstarter right now as we speak. Alex, it is a pleasure to talk to you, buddy.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is great.
Well, Shane was berating me. I was like, Shane emailed me like probably 10 times going, we're launching this Kickstarter. You got to have Alex on. We're launching this Kickstarter. You got to have Alex on. We're launching this Kickstarter. You got to have Alex on. I said, Shane, what about you? Why don't you come on and be on the podcast? No.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his excuse is. He never says.
He said he's working.
Like, oh, yeah. We're all working.
He's working nights now, and he's got something going. I just think because, like, Shane's such a charming Southern gentleman. Like, I would love to have him on the podcast just to be Southern and charming. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I picture him drinking, like, a mint julep wearing, like, a white suit just sitting on a patio, you know?
I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be very much on brand for Shane. Mm-hmm. Shane ain't here, so screw him. We're gonna
talked about some not showing up.
Yeah, we're gonna talk to the brains behind the operation. Now, Alex, it looks to me like you are actually live at your. Are you at your gallery as we speak, or is this?
Yeah, I'm actually in my gallery, which is in Chickamauga, Georgia, north of an hour and 45 minutes north of Atlanta, just 30 minutes outside Chattanooga.
That's pretty cool. So you have your own gallery. The ball's on you to have your own art gallery. That is really impressive.
Well, every weekend I'm not at a convention, I'm here. So it's the same kind of thing every weekend for me.
So what are you doing at your gallery? Like, are you working there? Are you promoting your work there?
I use it as a studio as well. So then when people come in, they view artwork. They look at art books and things I have. I have original art from people I picked up at shows too. So when I'm at a show, I'll buy from people. And then I'll bring that here. And so they get to see things that they normally don't get to see unless they're traveling to conventions.
That's cool. And you have a very stylized work. I've always dug it. Like, I noticed that a lot of your work that you promote at the cons and stuff are normally like black and white, like very stylized kind of pieces. I think it's a very cool looking pieces. Now, how did you settle into that style for your artwork?
I always tell people that I loved indie comics in the 80s when no one could afford color. So everybody was printing in black and white, and they really had that challenge. And so I loved looking at those books because you could really see the art behind it. Once it's colored, it's harder to see, right? So when you look at those older books, especially, they would have, you know, halftone patterns all over them. Mm-hmm. So that was really hard to see the line work. Now with digital coloring, you're seeing that line work crisp and clear, but before it was really hard. So I always loved seeing ink. So I always loved black and white books like Sin City and stuff like that.
That's cool. Now, we're also recording a little bit on video, but I guess nobody can hear video. So it's kind of pointless. But like, what's your favorite piece that you've done in your style, in your cool black and white style?
See, I play around with characters a lot. So I have a Pikachu Thor combo, which is pretty
fun. Really? Okay.
Like, talk about that one. Yeah, it always gets a chuckle when they walk by and see it. So
I noticed.
But it's real hard for me to choose a character out of everything.
And I noticed right behind you is the bride and Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah, that one's a fun one to do.
I can see it. It's right there. If you move slightly to your left, there it is. Bing, bing, bing. That's a good one.
Yeah, that was fun. It was going to be a very traditional Frankenstein bride, but I ended up giving her like tentacle legs and like a vampire skull, and she's got a sword. So it's like kind of out there, a little crazy.
That's cool. And Kevin has joined us. Kevin, can you hear us?
I can.
Okay, and we can hear you. So Kevin, meet Alex. Alex, this is Kevin.
Hey, Alex.
We just railed on for like 5 minutes about Shane Berryhill, who is a real sweet. Berryhill's a sweetheart. Yeah. How did you hook up with Berryhill?
He's local to me, so we met at conventions too.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So Berryhill kind of sweated you for like, hey man, let's do this book together. And you're like, fine, Shane, fine. Let's just do it. Just leave me alone. Is that how it came about?
Yeah, and we've done a couple little small projects in anthology pieces and stuff too, and things like that. But yeah, this is our first long form book. So, yeah.
Now, speaking of long form books, tell us about Jason and the Argonauts here that you guys are promoting on Kickstarter.
Well, it's a graphic novel, so it's 48 page graphic novel, so it's not real long, but it's about, it's kind of based on Greek myth, but it's set in the future. It's all space, and they're riding around in a starship called the Argo. And they're kind of humanity's last hope. They've escaped Earth when the Titans came to destroy it and things like that. So they're being hunted down by these Titan, these kind of huge creatures. So they have us different robot vehicles that they fly around in and pilot. And they form this giant robot, Talos, which is their defender. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's all females. I always describe it, my short, real fast pitch is always, it's female Voltron Force.
Nice.
So I always tell people that, and it's kind of fun. So.
Yeah, it's got a Voltron vibe to it.
Yeah,
I love the designs of the young ladies and their costumes. Does the one girl in the blue have a third eye?
Yeah, she's actually blind. She's like an oracle.
So nice. She can,
yeah.
That's cool, because you've got the green one, the purple one, the pink one, the red one, and the blue one.
Yeah, Jason is the one with the green hair, but she's a regular human, and where the other ones are demigoddesses, so she's trying to keep up with them, so she's got a lot of work to do.
That's awesome. Okay. And you said this thing is 48 pages long, so it sounds like you're going to get in, get out, and it looks great. Yeah. Dude. I mean, it looks
great. There's a lot of characters to fit in there, but yeah, it's pretty packed, so... Yeah,
that's cool. Now, why 48? Just to get it in and get it out?
I'm not trying to kill myself, because I am doing literally the pencils, the inks, the colors, the lettering, everything. So.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's what I usually do on my Kickstarters. So, if I can get a colorist to come in and help us, we'll see. But I think with our goal, our somewhat small goal right now is not really affording a colorist to be added to the team. So
3,200 is a good goal. And you guys, what, you've got 40 backers. You're about halfway.
Oh yeah. We're at like 51% right now. So yeah. We're looking to get some more, but yeah, it's
how you feeling about that?
Huh? Well, if people don't realize when they launch a Kickstarter, like what the up and down does to your mental, you know, like when the days that go by when no one backs it, no one hits it, and you're just like, it didn't change. You get nervous, and it really messes with you, and you start thinking, oh, maybe I should do something different, or you know.
Yeah. But you know who understands, Alex?
Let go.
You know who understands? We understand.
Yeah, you guys understand.
I would watch our Kickstarters like ball games. Like I would just sit there and stare at the computer screen and just wait for something to happen.
I would get frantic messages at all hours of the day or night.
Exactly.
Oh my God, it hasn't changed in like all day. Well, that's a scary feeling when
it is very scary.
You're putting yourself out there. You want people to believe in the stuff that you believe in. You want them to back your book, and you go in 2 days without any backers. That's a long, hard road to tell, my friends.
Yeah, but it is exciting. And on the other hand, when it actually, your phone's lighting up with, hey, there's a new backer. Hey, there's a new backer.
Oh, so you get phone updates?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're not brave enough for that, Alex.
No, I get the notifications. Like, it's not successful enough to where my phone's dying on me or anything. When it kills my phone, maybe I'll turn off the notifications.
That'd be hot. That'd be some Lady Guest shit right there, son.
Yeah, exactly.
If there were phone notifications involved, there would be no sleep for either of us.
No, I would just, I mean, I barely sleep during a Kickstarter. Because people that don't do Kickstarters and they bank, God bless all the people that back the Kickstarters. But
yes.
For people who do the Kickstarters, like, there is no rest. There's no, like, I would just wake up in the middle of the night and just check it real fast and go, okay, we've got, you know, 140 backers, and then go to bed, then check it first thing in the morning, go, okay, we got two more while I was sleeping. And it's no rhyme nor reason, because you think like, oh, if I go online and post things, then we'll get backers. But then sometimes that doesn't work either, you know?
No. I mean, people back when they feel like it, right? Like even though they know about the hold, the wait, and they'll decide. And
Bobby's like Julia Roberts in Notting Hill when we do it. Like, I'm just a boy standing in front of the internet asking Kickstarter to love him.
It's true. I mean, that's all I want, you know?
Yeah, I know.
It's a hard thing to do, man. It's a hard, because it goes, there's the planning, there's the rewards, there's what about this one? What about that one?
Yeah, the prep, just the launch is hard enough. I mean, people don't realize how hard it is to put that page together, and you're considering all the just different strategic things to put into the page.
We calm each other down. We it's good that there's you and Barry Hill are like in the same city, because then you can calm each other down. You can take each other out to coffee or like have a beer and calm each other down. So that's good. We're not in the same city, so it's constant phone calls and constant hysteria.
Barry Hill seems like a pretty calm dude. I mean, maybe that's just me speaking. Maybe that's just the the vibe he puts out at shows. But he always seems very chill. He's very relaxed.
Yeah. He hasn't gone crazy on me yet, so I guess
that's good.
Yeah, he hasn't lost it and gone like, we have no more backers, no one's come in yet. No, he's not sending any texts like that. So
when you're working with, do you normally work with writers? Because I know you did. The Action Cats Midnight thing. Was that something?
Hero Cats. Yeah.
Did you write Hero Cats?
No. Midnight. The creator of Hero Cats is in Atlanta.
And okay, so, yeah. Kyle Putterman, right?
Yeah, Kyle.
Okay.
And, I worked with him directly, and I did everything on the Midnight books. And Midnight was like the spinoff of the regular Hero Cats series.
Yes.
The regular Hero Cats is like a team of cats that fight supervillains, and Midnight's kind of the Batman cat. So I got to do all his books. So I got to be stylish with it and play around, and I did everything from the logo design to all the lettering and everything on that.
That's awesome. Now, how many of those books came out? Because that was a pretty successful series, Hero Cats.
We did two sets of three issues.
That's killer.
Yeah, okay. So there's two trades out there. Yeah.
Now, do you normally work with writers, or do you write yourself as well?
I've done two Kickstarter projects where I wrote the books myself.
Okay.
I did a short story called The Changing Tales, which is all based on Grimm fairy tales, where the characters are trapped in this loop and they're trying to break free, and the huntsman from Snow White kind of becomes aware, and so he's changing the stories. And so that was kind of a short little one shot that I did. And then I did my first Kickstarter was Infinity Pilot, which is about a female pilot of a giant robot defending the world.
That sounds cool. So what are some challenges in working with a writer and then doing everything yourself?
When I write, I'm writing visually along with script. So okay. I'm kind of working out like scenes and things, and I'm tying it all together, but I'm still pretty fluid. And I don't always work that way, but I did on Infinity Pilot, and I like that feeling of being able to change it and mold it a little different, and then do dialogue after. So it's kind of a Marvel method with myself, right? Mm-hmm. So that leaves you with a lot more visual cues that you can work with. Like, you can have whole pages that you're not really saying a whole lot because you're not thinking in dialogue anymore. You're thinking just completely with sequence and like frame to frame kind of things. So you can do a lot more with I always call it animating, when you're really making a frame tied to another frame. Mm-hmm. And so you can really do sequences and things like that. And it gets you out of, because when you write, you're breaking it down into typical page formats, like saying, oh, it's five page panels. Here's what happens. And you get into descriptions, and it's up to the artist to kind of mold that and change it maybe a little bit, play with it. And add sequences into there, like zooming a shot or changing and making one panel that the writer may have said, oh, this is the shot, and then it changes to this. Well, the artist might go in there and break that into three panels or something to do an animated effect.
Yes.
Yeah. But when you're working with yourself only, you're thinking in those effects from the get-go.
So. Okay. So as an artist, would you say it's easier to work in that Marvel style than it is when you have a script? Or would you say you prefer working from a script because it's a tighter regimen?
It depends. Sometimes it's nice to work from a script because there's not that, you're not questioning yourself, right? You're not never doubt, right? Because if you start doubting things, you start manipulating it, and then it never ends. You just keep changing things. But with a writer, what I find, what happens is it slows down a little bit, because what we have to do is we have to prove what I'm doing, right? And there's also a lot of thought of, what does this character really mean and to you? And then like, I'm trying to translate that and see and understand it too at the same time. So there's a little more work involved.
That makes sense.
When I do it myself, I automatically know there's no like trying to learn from each other what we're trying to go for. So it can be a little faster on that side if you're doing it all yourself.
Interesting. Yeah, because like Kevin and I have done projects in the Marvel style. And then we've also done projects where like we're breaking down panel by panel, page by page. And as a writer, I expect the artist to kind of go in and go, you know what, I kind of move this here and change the panel here and change the panel here, because I don't have all the answers. Like for me as a writer, like sometimes that's the hardest part of writing is some of the panel descriptions. And like if you're doing, Kevin and I were having this conversation yesterday. Yeah. Like if you have a scene of dialogue, like how do you do that dialogue on the page to make it interesting for everybody? How are you dragging the eye along, you know?
I can always tell when the writer's like going, it's up to you. And it's like kind of like leaving it a little open. And I can tell he's just telling me what is most like almost the first thought out of his head. It's more like the typical concept of how you break it down, right?
Yes.
So then it's up to me to like add complexity there and nuances and stuff. And so it kind of can, if you stick too close to a script, I think you won't add those pieces, like, unless the writer's like going crazy with that stuff and trying to come up with it on his own. But yeah, it's when you're working with a writer, yeah, you got to know, like, oh, I'm going to really elaborate and go and do some really interesting visual cues here and whatnot and add that in.
So, yeah, I would say that I actually liked the Marvel style when we did it for this anthology that we did, because it was just a little bit easier for me to go, oh, okay. Like, he just took the Marvel style thing that I like gave him plot wise and just ran with it. And yeah, this was easier to just go through and be like, oh, like, now all I have to do is figure out the dialogue, because
right,
we didn't have any definitely scripted dialogue. It was just loosely thrown in there. Like, here's what's happening. This person's mad about this. This is going on here.
Yeah, if people don't know what the Marvel method is. That's what it is. It's working off a loose concept, not just a tight script. So yeah. But I think it's worth spending a lot of time reviewing the art and how the dialogue's fitting in with the writer, because there could be changes at that point. And at that point you can change things up to make it sharper. Because I think a lot of times the artist might not translate it quite right, and it might seem weird with the dialogue if you take it directly out of the script and there's no review process at that point. Mm-hmm. I think there has to be some fluidity there and you should changes and being open to that at that point.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's where I think a good editor comes in as well too. Cause I mean, like, if you've got somebody who can edit your stuff and can edit it tight, then you can kind of get very concise. But sometimes some writers, and I tend to do this more than Kevin, I get wordy, because I love words. I love to talk. I love talking, you know? So I tend to get wordy. So sometimes I need an editor to come in and go, no, let's lose some of that. And what Kevin likes to do when he writes is Kevin will write basically the same piece of dialogue like three times, but in different ways each time. And then like, you just kind of pick the best one later. Like,
that's interesting. I've never seen a script like that.
Like, he'll write, because he'll pass the script over to me and I'll proofread it and see where we are. And then he'll have a line of dialogue that's the same kind of 3 points, just written slightly different each one. And it's just kind of like, whatever one sounds the best, we should do. And it normally the best line ends up getting on the page, which is cool. But this is long before like the artist will see. I would never hand something like that over to the artist, because they would think nuts, you know?
Yeah. The artist definitely wants a choice that, or doesn't want to have to choose. Like, that's they just want to be fed the stuff and then be able to like work with that. And because we're always reading it and thinking of what the writer's trying to say. Right?
Yes.
Kind of translate. Even though we're getting descriptions, we're getting dialogue, we're always thinking, okay, what is the point of these panels and how it ties together?
Yeah. Well, what is this knucklehead trying to do? That's awesome.
So, I mean, sometimes on the scripts we even write, if you got any questions, just call or email.
Sure. Yeah.
We'll straighten it out. So.
I think it's worth reviewing the script one-on-one, go through the whole thing if you can. Yeah, that always helps. So, yeah.
Nice. So you and Barry Hill seem to be working well together. This book looks really, really fun. Like, I'm hoping it works out for you guys. Like,
this is like everything from my childhood. I loved Robotech and Voltron and stuff. And
well, I mean, you already said that you did a book that's kind of similar but different to this. You know what I'm saying?
Now my Infinity Pilot was definitely like, it's kind of like the robot was kind of a mixture of Iron Giant and Thor mixed.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, and the pilots are reincarnated from the robots. So the robots are infinite back in time, and they keep reincarnating. They're recreating their like pilots over and over. So
that's awesome.
It's kind of an interesting little twist on the story.
That's cool.
Yeah, that is cool. Which Robotech though? See, this is important. was it Macross, or was it the second one, or the...
I grew up on Robotech. I would get up at 6:30 or 6 o'clock in the morning every Saturday and watch two episodes back to back of Robotech every week. So that's what I grew up on.
Well, I meant which one, like the planes, the motorcycle.
I liked all three of them, but I definitely the first series probably really got me with Rick Hunter and everybody.
With Rick Hunter, yeah. Rick Hunter and Rick.
Because the Bear Tech robots and everything. But, you know, yeah.
I mean,
I was a Cyclone guy myself.
I do love that. I had like a model of it and everything, made it and stuff. Yeah.
I love those things.
And then when it comes to Voltron, everybody loves the lions, but I think people sleep on the car.
Ships. Like a million ships that formed.
Yeah, and obviously people are, slept on that one. Like everybody loves the lion one, and obviously slow. But I remember the one that was like it had even the toy had the car wheels. So it was like the fucking thing was on roller skates.
It was like 100 vehicles, and the feet were cars.
Yeah,
and
it the rest sucked because it never stood still. It was just
they were like rovers. They were.
I had like the Shogun Warriors too. Like I had those big plastic robots.
And
those things have like roller skate wheels on the bottom too. If I remember right, as a kid.
Well, because if you get Godzilla to punch one of them, they need to fly backwards.
But the problem is Godzilla couldn't punch it because it would just gracefully slide across the floor, and you couldn't get over here, robot.
No impact.
Sock you in the face. Well, that's awesome, dude. So yeah, man. So this Kickstarter is going on for 16 more days. This podcast should be out tomorrow.
Oh, okay, great.
Or Thursday, so people will get the word quickly about it. Where are you on social media, Alex Ogle?
My main social media is Instagram. So if you look me up there, you'll find me. It's I think it's just Alex Ogle on there. But yeah, that's my main place where I post the most. I do post on Facebook. I have a Facebook page, but that's mostly about my gallery as well.
Okay.
What shows I'm going to.
I still love the idea that you have a gallery. Like, that's so wonderful. You do events and stuff. Didn't you do a 24-hour comic?
Yeah, I did. I had Hoyt Silva and Shane came to that as well. We all made comics that day.
That's awesome. Now explain to people who are listening, they might not know what a 24-hour comic is. It sounds pretty simple.
Oh. It sounds simple.
It's actually really not simple.
It's the second worst thing for stress next to Kickstarter. It's like you have to try to create a comic in 24 hours. So you're trying to create a page an hour, basically. But that's really tough too, because you might, the rules are a little weird. Like you can probably have a concept when you come in, like you don't have to like be, start from absolute scratch. You can have character designs in your head and all that stuff and just start making a comic. But yeah, trying to draw a comic in 24 hours is very difficult. Yeah. I don't know if we had anybody really make it. We did a lot of work. We had a lot of fun, but it's. We're all too picky to make it in 24 hours. Like we all laid out pages. We all made.
That's cool.
Pages, but yeah, it was like really difficult.
Now, have you ever went back and like mined those 24-hour comics for like ideas for other works?
A lot of people have. I know some of the people that were here. They actually released their comic. They made it. They finished it off and everything.
Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of bit and stuff. Yeah.
If memory serves me correctly, when we were talking to Ryan Otley at a show we were at, Grizzly Shark was a 24-hour comic idea.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like he said that he just came up with it for a 24-hour comic, and he just like kind of did it and finished it and then gave it to Image and was like, hey, I want to do this. And they were like, sure, let's do it.
Well, he said he didn't finish it 24. He didn't, just like Alex said, he didn't finish it that day, but he was like, this is too much fun to stop.
Exactly. The thing about it is that you can't do your best work in that 24-hour
period. No, it's impossible. Right?
So, yeah, you're not going to be shown anything that's really very print-ready. It's going to have to take some work afterwards. But, yeah, you have to be really loose in order to make it and actually finish something and have it tight enough to where you can really think, I'm going to print this book and go off without editing it after that.
But, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm not touching it again. Like you can, it's definitely a good starting point. I think that's a great way to look at it. Anybody can do the 24-hour challenge. It happens. I think, what is it? The first weekend, September maybe? Or
something like that. I thought it was it's September because what they do, Novel November, which sounds to me like, I don't understand why these social media people and all these artists and creatives want to try to kill themselves by doing a 24-hour comic and writing a novel in a month. Like, that sounds like fucking torture. Yeah. It just sounds like you're putting way too much pressure on yourself
to
get things done that you're already putting pressure on yourself to do anyway.
Yeah. The best thing to look at it as is it's a starting off point. It forces you to work solid that day. And it's a cool thing to get everybody together and just talk shop.
Yeah.
Conventions, we're not talking about that stuff. We're talking about like, this is a book I have coming out, or this is what I worked on, but we're not actually talking about like specifics. Like you can get into lots of detail. If you're sitting around with people for 24 hours, you're going to have a lot of conversations about all sorts of production things that you're going through and people are discovering new software and stuff. I mean, you're sharing lots of information.
That's cool, man. That's cool. And that's what we like to kind of do here on Word Bros, share information that might be interested. So again, check out the Kickstarter. It's live right now. It is Jason, Jacin, and the Argonauts. Right. It's up on Kickstarter. It's a beautiful book, man. Congratulations. It looks wonderful. It looks dope.
Yeah, I can't
wait for this thing to be out in the world from Shane Barry Hill and Alex Ogle. Alex, thank you for coming on, man.
Thank you for having me.
Alex Ogle promoting his Kickstarter, Jason and the Argonauts. It's live on Kickstarter right now. Just go to Kickstarter.com and search for Jason, J-A-C-I-N, and it'll pop right up. And you, yes, you can back that beautiful book. Alex is a talented dude, man. Talented cat.
It looks really good. So I'd suggest you guys like get on it. Check it out. It's
giant
robots and monsters. Like, you know how the Word Bros are. We like giant robots and monsters. We do.
Yeah, like... My dad had a saying when I was a kid. He used to say, simple things for simple minds. And giant monsters and robots is definitely like the be-all, end-all for simple things, simple minds, when I really stop and think about it. But yeah, man, it's a good book. It looks cool. Barry Hill's a cool dude. So I'm glad that that they got together and knocked that thing out. It must be weird to like work with an artist that lives in your town.
I don't think we've ever done that. Yeah, I think everybody's on the internet.
But as close as we've gotten is Drew. But I mean, Drew's in your town. He's not in my town.
Yeah. I mean, we're close enough. We're not even in the same town. But we're in the same state. So that's...
Well, Drew Moss, you guys are closer. You guys are like, you guys can hang out.
He's like 35 minutes away. But yeah. I mean, if he was in the same town, it would be a super, super... Like,
he's readily available, if you will.
Yes, he's not far. How about that?
Where you guys can sit down and have like meetings and stuff about the book.
Yeah, we can, but we don't.
You guys have brainstormed.
I mean, we have before. Yeah. But I mean, when I say we can, but we don't, I mean, like most of the time we end up bullshitting about other stuff we're more excited about.
Who wants to talk about work when you're hanging out? You know what I'm saying? Like most of the time we end up just making fun of each other like a bunch of dicks.
We do make fun of each other a lot when we're in the same room together.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of that happens, yeah. So we should probably talk more about doing cool shit than making fun of each other.
Maybe
we might get more done.
Maybe
it could happen.
Maybe could happen. But yeah. So and speaking of being together, I'll be in town for the 4th of July. So I'm going to try to get up with all of you dudes so we can hang out. So that'll be fun. And then maybe
4th of July is on a Thursday, so that's good. Like I can definitely hang out.
So yeah. So that'll be fun. So we'll get together and hang. I mean, I'm not going to hang out on the 4th of July. I'm sure I got to go watch.
No, you're going to be like on Friday or whatever.
Someday I'll be there hanging out, but it'll be fun.
Friday or Saturday usually with a Bobby hangout.
I'm excited for that. I'm excited to head back. We probably won't have a show 4th of July week because it's 4th of July.
It's 4th of July.
Yeah. But then after that, the 8th, we're going to have on Carlos, who's doing Strayed. Phony, that guy's got he's got a sweet hair. I'll give him that. Carlos.
He's got like a sweet afro.
Yeah.
Like it's awesome. Like, very nice. I mean, hopefully he listens to this and doesn't think we're making fun of him because we're not. When he walked away, I went, that guy has really cool hair. And Bobby goes, he does.
He does. Yeah. Like we'll have to tell him. I'll have to tell him, like, dude, you got sweet hair, dude.
Your hair's dope, man.
Yeah, that'll probably be knowing us. That'll be the way we lead the interview, man. You got cool hair.
Yeah, that's probably right. That's how we do things. I'd be like, hey, Carlos, we don't want to talk about your comic. We want to talk about hair. We want to talk about your hair.
Hey, that shit's so tight. But we don't want to give away all of our questions yet. We'll have to do that when he comes on. So he'll be our next guest. Yeah. So we got a lot of stuff coming up. Metal Shark Bro Volume 1 hits comic stores today because this podcast will be out on Wednesday the 26th. If you didn't back the Kickstarter, if you haven't seen us at a convention, if you want to buy the book, it should be available, readily available at your local comic shop. If not, you can order it and they can get it in. Metal Shark Bro Volume 1 in stores today, the 26th of
today. And we'll probably be talking about it a lot more, and we'll probably give you an ISBN number. We'll probably do all those kinds of things to get you to order the book. So
yeah,
please do. Please support your Word Bro friends here. Yeah. Us, the two of us and Walter have worked very hard on this Metal Shark Bro Volume 1, and we hope that you enjoy it. And the vast majority of people have, so that's really good. We like hearing all the nice things you guys have to say about the book and things you liked about it. What I like hearing more so than a review is things that you actually liked about it or things that surprised you about the book, because we weren't sure how it would go over. So you never like the cool thing about writing comedy is it's fun. The bad thing is you never know how the jokes are going to land or what jokes are going to land with whom. So you never know how that's going to go over. So when we're writing jokes, we're just tossing jokes out there into the ether. And to hear you guys talk about certain jokes is awesome. So
yeah, it's cool, man. We really dig it. So yeah, dude. So your fine local comic store will have Metal Shark Bro. So pick that up and we will talk to you guys in 2 weeks with Carlos from Strayed and Space Riders 3.
You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.